Coming up, more moral questions about the intervention in Libya. Also, as the protests spread through the Arab world, the voices of some very divided Israelis and Palestinians. Plus, in the U.S., when Catholic and non-Catholic hospitals merge, Catholic bishops can make decisions about women's health, and some doctors object.
We can make that decision, but then it has to be okayed by someone else who puts their belief systems and their ethics on me and on my patients, which I just don't think is right.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Tensions are rising in Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank after this week's escalation of violence. Faith-based groups are among those condemning Wednesday's deadly bombing at a bus stop in Jerusalem, the first major attack in Jerusalem in 4 years. One person died and more than two dozen others were wounded. Several U.S. Jewish groups expressed their outrage. The group Churches for Middle East Peace also denounced the violence and called on the international community to take more action to restart the peace process. In Libya, fighting continued between Gaddafi loyalists and the rebels despite the international military intervention. And amid the violence, new concerns are now being raised about a potential humanitarian crisis in cities occupied by the rebels. Some aid groups say residents are without power, adequate food, and water. In Rome, Pope Benedict XVI urged political and military leaders to consider the safety of civilians. And in the U.S., vigorous debate has broken out over this country's role in the intervention and the ultimate goal of the mission. Last week on this program, we examined the moral questions involved in intervening in Libya. A week after the intervention began, many questions remain, and we explore them with William Galston, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington. Bill, many thanks for coming to talk to us.
Good to be here.
You have described a theory that you call preventive humanitarian intervention. Would you describe what that is?
Sure. It's not that complicated. In the 1990s, there were two episodes of genocidal ethnic cleansing, one in the Balkans, the other in Rwanda. In both cases, the international community waited too long to intervene, and the result was a disaster. Many people in the White House remember that. Some of them were there in policy-making positions. They were determined not to repeat it. When the Libyan forces were on the edge of Benghazi and Colonel Gaddafi issued a blood-curdling threat to hunt down the dissidents alley by alley, the administration thought that it had no choice but to act to prevent an impending bloodbath, and I think they were right.
You've also spoken of our two objectives. Spell those out.
We have a humanitarian objective and a political objective. The humanitarian objective is to protect innocent civilian life. The political objective, which President Obama articulated some weeks ago, is to secure the exit of Colonel Gaddafi from power. The UN and the international coalition and U.S. military power are being deployed in pursuit of the first humanitarian objective, and we intend to use other means, diplomatic, political, and especially financial, to, as the president has put it, tighten the noose around Gaddafi and make his position untenable, but that will take some time.
Yeah. And in the meantime, in the cities, here are Gaddafi's forces intermingled, I think, with civilians. How can air power be used against Gaddafi's forces in those places without killing a lot of civilians?
You can't. But that doesn't mean that air power is useless in those circumstances, because Gaddafi's forces have supply lines outside the cities. If those supply lines and lines of reinforcement are interdicted through air power, which they can, over time, it will be possible to cut off Gaddafi's forces in those cities.
A lot of people thinking about this kind of thing and talking about it use, just between themselves, the word assassination. Is it ever morally permissible to assassinate a head of state?
Sometimes, and international law has defined the line between the circumstances in which it is and the circumstances in which it isn't. If a political leader is also in the military chain of command and is directly operational in that capacity, then it is legitimate to act against him or her directly. Colonel Gaddafi has never left the Libyan armed forces, to the best of my knowledge, and certainly he is in direct personal control of the military forces that his sons are the commanders of. So, from a legal standpoint, there is no objection that I can see. From a political standpoint, there are many complications.
Yeah. Another idea, a lot of people will look at what's happening in Libya, what we're doing in Libya, and say, well, so what does that mean for other places in the world where people are suffering because of the misdeeds of their rulers? Do we now have a greater obligation than we did before to go and intervene someplace else?
We don't have a greater obligation than we did before, but it's important to note that we don't have an obligation to be everywhere for the very simple reason that we don't have the capacity to be everywhere. An example that I sometimes use is of a lifeguard walking along the edge of a beach. Here's someone crying out from offshore. Is there an obligation to assist every drowning person? No, but there is certainly an obligation on the lifeguard's part to assist that one if he or she can.
John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, wrote a letter this past week to President Obama asking the question whether it is an acceptable outcome for Gaddafi to remain in power after the military effort ends. How would you answer that?
It's a very undesirable outcome. Whether it's an acceptable outcome depends on what the alternative is. Suppose it were the case that the only way to get rid of Gaddafi would be to deploy American ground forces. Under those circumstances, I think the president has made the judgment, with which I agree, that given the fact that we're already involved in two other countries, Afghanistan and Iraq, it would be extremely unwise and perhaps even impossible to deploy U.S. ground forces in a third country. So we might have to live with Muammar Gaddafi as the king of Tripoli and protect what I think of as Benghazistan against him.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, in just a couple of words, is this going to end with negotiations?
Who knows? I think that would be a very difficult negotiation because I don't think Colonel Gaddafi has any intention of leaving power voluntarily or leaving his country.
William Galston of the Brookings Institution, many thanks.
My pleasure.
In other news, anti-government protests continue in Bahrain, Yemen, and Syria. Scores of people have been killed in government crackdowns. Meanwhile, in Egypt, voters went to the polls peacefully and approved changes to the country's constitution. The referendum lays the groundwork for national elections in the coming months. Some say they worry the short timetable will favor the Muslim Brotherhood because it's better organized than other parties. Because of fears of the Brotherhood, many Coptic Christians were urged to vote against the constitutional changes. Questions also remain over what coming elections could mean for the future of Egypt's peace treaty with Israel. As the so-called Arab Spring spread out from Egypt and Tunisia, the New York filmmakers Oren Rudofsky and Menachem Dom were in Israel listening to the hopes and concerns of Palestinian Arabs and Israelis. Here's a sample of what they heard. Unscientific, but still revealing.
Revolution in Egypt, the first reaction of the Israeli public was kind of being in panic, as if, you know, you see democracy on site and people are panicking.
Listen, the situation is not good for us or for them, because there won't be a strong leadership. And we are the ones who have to be strong, or else they'll wipe us out.
I understand the fear of Muslim Brothers and But it doesn't seem this. That's what the people in Egypt or in Tunisia want. They really want freedom, and I think we should trust them on what they want. They want to live properly. They want to have jobs. They want to live like everybody else.
I think we need to focus on democracy, human rights, freedom of expression, and hope that in the marketplace of ideas, that tolerance and freedom, tolerance of other people in the region will play out to Israel's benefit.
The Palestinian people have had a lot of problems. Every time an event like that happens in an Arab country, it's good for Palestine. Every flag raised calls for the liberation of the Palestinian people, and we're witnesses to that. We are now in front of a bright new beginning, hopefully. Look at the Europeans. They are supporting the Libyan people, not their rulers. Before, they used to side with the rulers. Now everybody knows the truth and feels sorry for the Palestinian people and all other people who are oppressed by their governments, as if they were imprisoned. All this will have an impact on the Palestinian youth, who will be affected by the events in the Arab world. Now they can claim back their freedom, the same way they see it happening in Egypt, in Tunisia, and hopefully soon in Libya.
You know, something is changing, and I'm wondering, I don't know, but I think it will come here. I mean, it's very difficult to believe that the whole Arab world will be in riots and Jerusalem and the West Bank are going to be quiet.
The Palestinian Bureau of Statistics has released figures showing that in the area between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River, there are 5.5 million Palestinians and 5.8 million Jews. Because of their higher birth rate, the number of Palestinians is expected to equal the number of Jews in about 3.5 years. In other news, faith-based and humanitarian groups continue to deliver aid to the victims of the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. 500,000 people are still in emergency shelters and in need of basic supplies. Stores in Tokyo have begun rationing goods, and the demand for bottled water had also risen because of high levels of radiation found in tap water in some areas. Faith groups in the U.S. have urged their members to continue donating to relief efforts. The board of the National Association of Evangelicals this week approved a resolution calling on President Obama and Congress to lower the national debt, but do so in ways that won't hurt the poor. The resolution specifically raised concerns about proposals that would reduce foreign humanitarian aid. The NAE said it supports efforts to address deficit spending, but the group said those efforts must be evaluated for their impact on the vulnerable. Meanwhile, in a separate initiative, several prominent Christian leaders will announce next week they're beginning a prayer and fasting campaign to protect programs that help poor people in the U.S. and around the world. During his trip to El Salvador this week, President Obama visited the tomb of Roman Catholic Archbishop Oscar Romero, the slain church leader who campaigned for human rights and the poor. 31 years ago this week, Romero was shot to death as he celebrated Mass in San Salvador. The Archbishop had spoken out against repression and the Salvadoran military's massacres of civilians. No one was ever punished for his murder. In marking the anniversary of his death, the U.S. bishops urged Catholics to continue Romero's legacy of being a voice for the marginalized. Now, a healthcare dilemma. As more and more secular hospitals around the country merge with Catholic hospitals, local Catholic bishops are making decisions about medical care that some doctors and patients don't like. This is especially true in the area of women's health. Lucky Severson spoke with doctors and church officials.
The protesters are here each weekday morning. Not a lot of them, but they're not alone. What began in Sierra Vista, a town about 80 miles southeast of Tucson, as a quiet merger between the Sierra Vista Regional Health Center and the Catholic Carondelet Health Network, has turned into a religious and ethical standoff over patients' rights.
The moral issue for me is that they wish to take my moral choice away. I think I'm very capable of making my moral choices, and I've done pretty good for, 67 years.
What the merger means is that Sierra Vista, a rural secular hospital, must now abide by the Catholic ethical and religious directives, which prohibit certain procedures. So physicians can no longer do abortions, even when the mother's life is in danger, and they can no longer perform sterilizations or provide contraception.
This county has one of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the country, not just the county. Immediately when this arrangement went in, there would be no talk of birth control. If we had two hospitals, we wouldn't be here because there would be a choice.
One doctor has quit, and others who work at Sierra Vista, like Dr. Robert Holder, an OBGYN, are very upset.
The majority of the medical staff is not real happy with the way, with the fact that this is occurring and also the way that it came about. It was hard for us to figure out. I mean, just thinking long-term how this was going to work out practically.
Dr. Bruce Silva, another OBGYN at Sierra Vista, says Catholic directives often go against health care decisions he and his patient think are best.
The person who makes that decision is not me and the woman. We can make that decision, but then it has to be okayed by someone else who puts their belief systems and their ethics on me and on my patients, which I just don't think is right.
Right or wrong, the Catholic Church takes its directives very seriously. Last year, Bishop Thomas Olmsted of the Catholic Diocese of Phoenix cracked down on this hospital, St. Joseph's, after a doctor terminated the pregnancy of a mother who had developed pulmonary hypertension, which has a high mortality rate among pregnant women.
It was not an either-or case. That baby was not going to survive because the mother was not going to survive. So your decision is, do you let both die or do you terminate the pregnancy so the mother can live? And to me, that's a no-brainer.
But Bishop Olmsted disagreed with the doctors.
In this case, the baby was healthy, and there were no problems with the pregnancy. Rather, the mother had a disease that needed to be treated. But instead of treating the disease, St. Joseph's Medical Staff and Ethics Committee decided that the healthy 11-week-old baby should be directly killed.
Bishop Olmsted stripped St. Joseph's of its 116-year-long Catholic affiliation, and Sister Margaret McBride, the nun who had approved the abortion, was excommunicated. Reverend Thomas Wynandy is the executive director for the Secretariat of Doctrine at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. He and Richard Dorflinger, who handles bioethics issues for the conference, defended the church's ethical and religious directives, which they say are based on gospel teachings about the dignity of life.
Do you support Bishop Olmsted's ruling with St. Joseph's in Phoenix?
Bishop Olmsted has the authority to make the right decision. I mean, personally, I support it.
If you directly said the mother could not live unless we aborted the child, then that would be contrary to gospel values and the teaching of the church.
So you would not perform an abortion even if it meant saving the life of the mother?
You would do everything else to save her life except directly kill someone else. There are times when the mother needs treatment to save her life or to prevent some other terrible injury that is going to lead, as a side effect, to risking the child's life, maybe ending the child's life. And that's acceptable in Catholic teaching because your intent is not to take the child's life, it's to treat the woman's life.
You have a child that is conceived because of incest or rape. Same.
Well, sure. You don't kill somebody just because of their how it happened. I mean, that doesn't make their life make it any less worthy of living.
Dr. Holder tells of a mother who had miscarried one of her twins and was about to lose the other.
We were advised to send that person 80 miles away to another hospital because there was a heartbeat, and that was a very difficult situation for me to manage.
Some people will define abortion if a baby has a heart rate and you terminate that pregnancy, it's an abortion. But there are times, for instance, with a pregnancy in the fallopian tube, where babies will have heart rates, but that baby cannot survive there. It is impossible. So there are some places where they do not allow you to terminate that baby. This is the real problem, is that it's defined differently by different bishops who are the ones that decide how your hospital is going to run.
Officials at the Sierra Vista Regional Health Center declined to be interviewed, but the circumstances here are not unique. Catholic hospitals have become the largest nonprofit health care provider in the U.S. with over 600 hospitals. This year, one in six patients will be cared for at a Catholic hospital.
I have worked in Catholic hospitals before and have no problems with that. I think Catholic hospitals do great care. But it was in a larger city where there was another hospital there, so women had a choice. Here, we're very rural.
I'm Jessica Graham to see Dr. Silva. Okay.
Sierra Vista's new directives posed a very real problem for Jessica Graham, who's going to have her second baby by C-section at Sierra Vista, and then get a tubal ligation or have her tubes tied. She and her husband didn't want any more children.
So I said, well, can we have tie my tubes while I'm, you know, in surgery for C-section? And when I got pregnant, that was the option, and that was the plan. And then it changed during my pregnancy when they did the merger here.
I do a cesarean section. The woman is open already. And so if I do the tubal ligation, it adds nothing on to the risk that she has. But I can't do them here.
So Jessica was forced to have a second surgery in another city, which could have created problems.
People get infected. People can get bowel injuries. There are a lot of different things. You can have a reaction to the anesthetic that, you know, can kill people. People die from tubal ligations every year now, very, very, very rarely. But why undergo that risk?
The fact that they can't get receive sterilizations or abortions at a Catholic health care facility is not a form of suffering at all. As a matter of fact, that we're protecting them from evil things that could happen to them.
Dr. Silva says his Sierra Vista patients can't get the standard of care they deserve, and that some simply can't afford a second operation at another hospital. He says when he worked at a Catholic hospital 20 years ago, tubal ligations were permitted.
But politically, things change. You get someone who's a little more conservative in, and they now stop you from doing that.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with politics. It has to do with the language of the directives, which are a reflection of Catholic teaching, and the bishop's theological understanding of what that requires.
Another concern for the protesters outside Sierra Vista is that what happens with their end-of-life wishes if the Catholic Church doesn't agree with them.
They talk about the fact that all of your end-of-life wishes will be observed unless they go against Catholic teaching. The problem is, what does that last line mean?
Dr. Holder says in these hard economic times, he understands the need for smaller hospitals like Sierra Vista to hook up with a larger health care service, but he thinks there are more suitable non-Catholic partners out there, and he's hopeful that one will come along.
I don't think that they quite expected the pushback from the community, and I think it's at least opened their eyes to think that maybe we need to relook at this and look at some alternatives.
The merger process is not completed and won't be for months. Doctors hope for a compromise, but they realize that the Catholic Church won't be changing its directives. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Sierra Vista, Arizona.
On our calendar this week, Monday is Chordad Sal, one of the most important holidays on the Zoroastrian calendar. It marks the birthday of Zarathustra, the founder of the religion, who was born in the 7th century B.C., approximately 2,600 years ago. And finally, Jews are getting ready to observe Passover next month. In preparation, Maxwell House, the coffee company, has released a new edition of its hugely popular Haggadah, the readings used during the Passover Seder. Maxwell House has done a Haggadah giveaway since 1932, as part of an advertising campaign to get Jews to drink coffee during Passover. Apparently, some Jews had once considered coffee a legume, therefore not kosher. But in 1923, an Orthodox rabbi decreed that the coffee bean is a berry, and therefore okay for Passover. Since then, more than 50 million copies of the Haggadah have been printed, making it, according to the company, the most widely used Haggadah in the world. good to the last page. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. We have much more on our website where you can comment on all our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, find us on YouTube, and watch us anytime, anywhere, on smartphones and iPhones with our mobile web app. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from India, where Hindus celebrated the colorful holiday of Holi.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be more.